and welcome to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 154. This is the podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. I know I've raved about Alaska-grown peonies for a few years, and yes, they are one of my floral obsessions. No apology here. When it comes to peonies, the 50-mile bouquet is now the 1,500-mile bouquet. But the exciting news is that these flowers are providing a very important, value-added crop for farmers in Alaska. Their lovely peonies are satisfying demand at a time when no one else on the planet can supply the popular flower. And those blooms have stimulated economic development in a state that greatly needs it. After touring Alaska's three primary growing regions for cut peonies in 2012, I have been a passionate booster for this fabulous American-grown crop, sharing the story of uncommonly beautiful summer peonies available from Alaska farms in July, August, and even September. My magazine articles, blog posts, lectures, and even a previous podcast episode have highlighted peonies for the cut flower trade and consumers who are just as smitten by those Alaska beauties as I am. So it is with a huge amount of joy that I bring you today a special episode about peonies in Alaska. Here's an update. Thanks to the Homer Garden Club and co-chairs Brenda Adams and Ronnie Overway, I returned last weekend to speak at the popular Homer Gardeners Weekend, an event packed 2 days featuring lectures, tours, and a fun reception at Homer's only winery. I spoke about floral design with seasonal ingredients, and I led an afternoon hands-on workshop using only Alaska-grown flowers, which was mind-blowing. Wait till you see the photos on DeborahPrinzing.com. Against all this activity was the beautiful backdrop of Homer and its waters, glacier, and expansive skies. The landscape is unforgettable, and I loved being able to look across Kachemak Bay to Gruink Glacier, a sight one never tires of. In this episode, you will hear from Beth Van Sant, owner of Scenic Place Peonies in Homer, Alaska, and from Christina Stemble, owner of San Francisco-based Farm Grow Flowers. Beth's peonies will blow you away, and I promise to post lots of photos of her fields and stems as part of my show notes on DeborahPrinzing.com. It was so wonderful to share my excitement with Christina, who joined me on this fun floral vacay. Christina is a foremost advocate for domestic cut flowers. Through her company, Farm Grow Flowers, this woman has been a tireless advocate for local and seasonal blooms. She sources all around California, promotes California flower farms, and sustainable design. When I told Christina back in March that I was heading to Homer in early August, she said, "I'd love to come." And I took her seriously. While the companionship was wonderful, I also enjoyed the intellectual and creative stimulation of being with a kindred spirit, a fellow American-grown flower advocate, a designer who walks the talk with what she uses in her daily projects for customers who shop at farmgrowflowers.com, and those special order FarmGrow customers who want the look to decorate and celebrate weddings and events for their personal lives. Christina and I sat down one morning to record our musings about what we were both personally experiencing on this trip. We owe a huge thanks to our host, Beth Van Sant, owner of Scenic Place Peonies, with her husband, Kurt Wyhand. Their Scenic Place B&B was our home for 4 nights, and we were cozy, comfy, and happy. It was a magical trip for me in so many ways, and I'm grateful to Christina, to Beth, and all the other Homer peony farmers for giving me such a memorable experience. Please enjoy this conversation with Christina and Beth as we talk about all of our favorite topics. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, coming to you from Homer, Alaska, the most beautiful place to spend a summer day. And I'm here with Christina Stemble of Farm Grow Flowers. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Deborah.
And you all might be wondering why Deborah and Christina are together in Alaska, but we came here for a peony passion. And I was invited to speak to the Homer Garden Club this weekend for their Homer Gardeners Weekend, and that's tonight. And this afternoon, we're having a floral design workshop, and I'm dragging Christina in to wow people with her skills, because we have totally different ways that we teach, so they're going to get a twofer.
Awesome. Buy one, get one free.
And we're here as the guests of Beth Van Sant of Scenic Place Peonies. And Christina, describe where we're sitting and what you see.
I don't even think I could give it justice. We are sitting on a deck overlooking... what's this bay called? It's
Glacier Bay. Some Kamachuk Bay. I don't know. We'll get the name
and
right.
And there's, five glaciers within view?
Ugh.
And it's just the most picturesque view that I've ever seen in my life, hands
it
down.
It is. It's sea, mountains, and sky forever.
And greenery. Like, it's lush on land and blue in the ocean. And, it's amazing here.
And we're looking at Homer Spit, which is this mm-hmm. long spit that we actually... we left from yesterday.
Yeah. And you can drive to the very end of it. It's the largest spit.
Second largest in the world, I think.
The world. Yeah. It's amazing.
So even though we can't exactly describe what we're seeing, we'll look on my website and on Christina's blog. We're going to post pictures of our adventure.
And Scenic Place Peony Farm. You can look up. She has a website and has pictures of her peonies and probably the views as well. It's amazing.
Mm. So a little background. A couple years ago, exactly 2 years ago this week, I came to spend a week in Alaska on a marathon. And I started in Fairbanks and I worked my way south to Homer over the course of 7 days and I visited 12 peony farms.
Wow.
And the farmers couldn't have been more gracious mm-hmm. and hospitable and welcoming and so eager to share their mm-hmm. their kind of new industry with a flower writer who was fascinated. Mm-hmm. And Homer was my favorite spot, and I think it's because it really does remind me of the Pacific Northwest. It's more evergreen here and more maritime mm-hmm. influence, but also the people were just like people you'd want to hang out with all the time.
Yeah. I want to move here.
I know you do.
Yeah.
And so luckily, Beth was one of the people that, Beth and her husband, Kurt, who really shared their story with us. And there's something amazing here about peonies. And Christina, this got under your skin. So why mm-hmm. are you here?
So first off, thank you for letting me tag along
of
with
course.
You. When you told me that peonies were being grown in Alaska, number one, I don't think I believed you fully. I had to look it up myself.
You have to see the photos to believe
yes,
it.
Yes, and not just peonies, but amazing, beautiful, huge peonies. And the fact that their growing season here is so different than the lower 48, California growing season where we currently, buy all of our peonies, it just really intrigued me that, hey, if we could be able to source U.S.-grown peonies from April through, August or September, what an amazing win would that be?
Right. Right now, for Farm Girl Bouquets, how many months do you have peonies or you're able to source in California?
About, 3 months if we're lucky. It's mm-hmm. about 8 to 12 weeks total, but, the really good ones are within 8 weeks, and then there's, 4 weeks of the, ones that you're trying to keep going, the little lollipops, we call them.
Okay, so what is it about peonies that gets you jazzed? Because they're just, aren't they the same, as awesome as every other flower?
No. They are in their own category.
Okay.
So we've done some, we've asked some of our customers what their favorite flower is, and 90% peonies are their favorite flower. I would say that's probably, I don't have a hard statistic for, U.S.-wide, what people's favorite flower, especially women's favorite flower
is. But your customers.
But my customers, and I would bet probably, a bottle of the best wine that I had on the fact that peonies are probably the number one flower out there that women want. So if we could give our customer U.S.-grown peonies 6 months out of the year, that would be amazing. They ship well. They for hand deliveries, they are resilient,
That's
and they're just wow. They're the wow factor that most other flowers don't have.
And when you arrange with peonies, depending on the stage, you can get up at least 5 days out of that arrangement, right?
So we typically deliver bouquets in bud form, or with peonies. We try to, have one that's cracked open mm-hmm. a bit, but not fully blown out, mm-hmm. Because they'll get at least a week out of them. For other florists that are listening here, I often talk to them about how, you know, dahlia season can be a bit challenging, even though dahlias are gorgeous and beautiful. And I used to be called the dahlia queen at the San Francisco Flower Market because I would buy so many dahlias. But the life of dahlias, you know, really healthy 3 to 4 days. You know, some of the varieties you can get 5 days out of.
Like the ball.
The ones, ball dahlias, yeah. The honeycomb looking ones. I think it's in the foxy family, they say. But, you know, following peony season where you get a minimum of a week, usually, you know, 7, 10 days
right.
Out of them, dahlia season can be a bit challenging. So it's the least complaint time of year for us since we use all seasonal flowers. Peony season is great for us because everybody loves their bouquet when it comes with peonies in it. Everyone.
Yeah.
You just have so few complaints. So as a florist, that's really, really great.
Well, it's so interesting because when we were walking the fields at another farm yesterday, Chili Root Peony Farm, owned by Michelle Lafreniere, and I hopefully will get back there and take more photos. And then when we were walking the farm here, looking at Beth and Kurt's peonies, we talked a lot about color and form. And what I heard from the peony farmers when I first started interviewing them 2 years ago is that, you know, when they put their roots in the ground, it was up to three or more years before they could start really cutting and selling. So it took them three, they had a bit of a lag time before they understood what the marketplace response was to colors.
Yep.
And I remember people saying to me, you know, if I knew then what I know now, I would have planted 75% white and
blush.
Cream and blush. That's specifically for bridal. For farm girl, do you have a different ratio?
Yes. I love that most buyers will want the white blush and cream because I want the opposite. So it makes the marketplace much better for me.
You're not competing with the bridal designers.
Competing. And I, you know, to be fair and reciprocate the generosity of these amazing growers up here, I tell them, grow mostly white, blush and cream.
Because you can make a lot of money.
You can make a lot of money. You can charge more for them. There's a, it's just, you're going to sell every stem, guaranteed. And so, you know, I don't withhold that information. I think they definitely should, you know, maximize their potential, economic potential. So, but I want the rest. So plant 75% those colors, plant 25% bright colors. So I love the magenta, the reds, the really saturated colors, the bright pinks, the ones that just really add a oomph. They photograph great, which we really appreciate for our Instagram and all of our digital media. They are really easy. I mean, they're the focal flower of the arrangement. So we build around those. So if we have, you know, a magenta, you know, we'll put like a softer peach tone with it and some white, and I mean, you're good to go. It's like an easy recipe, and everybody's happy, and it just, it, to me, a magenta peony or a red peony over a blush or a white, I would take any day
of
the week.
And the hot, one of the hot colors now is this coral charm peony.
Yes.
I don't think there is enough supply for that demand.
No. And that works for both.
Right.
The great thing about coral charm and all the coral, Michelle was telling me all the names. I'm not very good with all the
names. Yeah, I don't remember the names, but there's several
pink
in
coral
that world.
Or, is that it works for bridal and it works for retail, traditional retail. So coral is just the hottest. Basically in any flower.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking about peonies today, but there's dahlias. There's so many coral dahlias that people don't grow at all. And I'm just floored because if you grow anything in coral, you're going to sell it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And coral also kind of expands to anything from apricot to to peach to
anything
melon.
In that family.
Yeah,
melons. There's a watermelon color that's really pretty that some roses grow and stuff.
Well, okay, so basically you want them to grow 100% coral. Forget that other ratio.
I actually think coral's probably the number one moneymaker for them because everybody wants it. Anybody and everybody that is selling flowers, whether it be bridal events or retail or, you know, any type of setting, will want coral. And then do blush, whites, and creams, and then do bright colors. But give us all of your bright colors.
Well, let's segue into talking about design because we've talked about about design quite a bit on this trip. Well, backing up, we've had a lot of time together, but it started with that marathon conversation on the Seattle to Anchorage flight.
Yes. the poor people around us.
They learned a lot.
Yeah, they did. If they were interested in flowers, it was like an education, I think.
Yeah, we talked a lot about business, too.
Yes.
But the design, I think that you've had a lot of fun talking with Beth about design. Beth has, of course, this enormous peony farm, but she has a high tunnel filled with,
everything.
I'd say 50 varieties of things that we cut this morning.
Yes.
Today's Farmer's Market Day in Homer, and we were up late the last two nights because people don't go to bed till midnight here.
It's still light at midnight. My system is so messed up. I didn't go to bed till 1:30 this morning because I was like, it's still light out. I can't go to bed when it's light out.
I know. It was light when I went to bed and light when I woke up. I think it was dark somewhere in between.
Yeah.
But we got up early and joined Beth in her high tunnel, and well, first, Christina, you went and cut peonies. I was still sleeping.
Yes.
And that was,
I didn't even mind getting up that early to go cut peonies. I got up and I was like, oh, I'm going to cut peonies.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, well, what did you learn from Beth about when she likes to cut the peonies?
So the interesting thing, so we like them at Farm Girl much tighter than how, you know, most of the people they cut them for want them already cracked a little bit because they're probably not giving enough time to get them fully open for weddings or events, things like that.
Sure.
Today we were cutting for Farmer's Market, which is great because you want them fully open. So you are like, you know, halfway to full open.
Yeah.
So we were picking, or we were cutting, like I like to, if even if we're, it's for Farmer's Market, like if they're all buds, nobody's going to pick them up, which is really interesting because they don't know they're going to open up to be like 6 or 8 inches or whatever.
They
have
to have one example of that killer arrangement.
So it's great to put one fully open and one like half open one for Farmer's Markets because then they can take out the expired, you know, once the full one expires and they'll still have the other one that, that will last some time.
But then how were you choosing and gauging the stem length?
Yeah, so we cut the peonies first before the high tunnel crop. And looking back, I'd probably do it the opposite because after going the high tunnel and seeing that there was a lot of shorties, varieties of flowers, we ended up making some a lot shorter than what I anticipated. So we could have cut a lot shorter than we did. We cut about 12 inches and we could have cut like half 12 and half like 6 inches.
Yeah.
Because we ended up cutting a lot of the stem off when we were bunching.
So then we went into the high tunnel, and I think we should just try to remind ourselves what we were cutting. But first, you went made a beeline for the lilies.
Lilies, yeah.
And these lilies, I mean, who
amazing lilies
that this stuff grows? And now, of course,
there was like eight like
buds
on these, 8 to 9 buds on each of these lilies,
amazing.
And amazing colors too. And usually, we only use white because I'm really picky about lily colors because what is grown around us in California usually are the really bright colors that are just impossible to match, basically.
They're too strong for everything
else. Too strong. And I am very demanding about color, as my team knows. And so white, I do white or butter or cream or something. They match everything. But she had the most amazing, like, peach colors and the variegated,
the bicolored
rose and light butter and just ones that were amazing to work
pretty
with.
Pretty eye-catching.
Yeah.
We also picked some glads, and you have, maybe you're changing your attitude about gladiolas.
Yes, I usually hate gladiolas. They're known as the funeral flower, most people know. But these gladiolas, too, are like bi- and tri-colored gladiolas I've never seen before.
Yeah,
just
and they
amazing.
Have these dark throats and these little creamy white margins on them.
Even snapdragons. We only use white snapdragons. It drives everyone nuts. I mean, we order hundreds and hundreds of bunches of snapdragons every week. It's a great filler flower. And it's long lasting and we love it, but we only use white. Well, she had some that I've never seen before that were,
very painterly, like watercolor.
They were watercolor and they were like white at the base of each one, like a stark white. And then had the apricot peach and butter yellow instead of it being the really loud neon colors. They were they were gorgeous.
They were kind of in that, I guess, what would you call them? Bright pastels.
Yes.
They weren't washed out,
mm-mm.
But they really, it's back to that coral color you love.
Yes.
And then there were a few dark magenta ones that you grabbed.
Mm-hmm. That adds a great, I actually really love burgundies, and it was like a magenta, but a dark magenta, so we paired those with the burgundy amaranthus and put it with some lighter pink dahlia with the white centers, and it was like the juxtaposition of the dark and light just really worked together really well.
Yeah, I had so much fun making those bouquets because every single one of them was different, and when we laid all the product out on the table, that's when I realized Beth is a full-service flower farmer. She doesn't realize it, but she even said, I have more than I knew what to do with.
We had at least 30 varieties in there of flowers.
Yeah, I loved there were some poppies and
Icelandic poppies and peach and apricot
on August
and
2nd.
Coral and yeah, they're just amazing. Yeah,
And then the Veronica really caught my eye. The greenery, all the greenery we chose was amazing.
Yes.
So that was really fun, and I think what Beth really enjoyed is that, you know, it's a lonely business being a flower farmer. You're isolated, and you're kind of talking to yourself all the time, and you're tired. And we got to ooh and ah so much that she kind of got into it and made some darn good bouquets.
Yeah. I was talking to her about, I think, when Farm Girl, when we moved into the flower market, a lot of the growers there made comments about how it was great to see their product at work, basically, like in action. So
being used by an artist.
Yeah, exactly. And so when they see it, you know, when they're cutting and, you know, packing, you know, single variety, like, you know, I mean, they're stunning, they're peonies, and so they're stunning and everything, but they don't get to see it, the end product very often when, you know, they're shipping to the people that are going to make the end product. So it was really fun. It was really fun for me to get to, you know, learn about the growing process of peonies and all these other varieties from her, and I think it was fun for her to see how we then design them into beautiful arrangements for the consumers to buy.
One of the fun things that I learned from you today is a farm girl secret about when you're doing this sort of flat-backed hand-tied bouquet, so everything's kind of facing one way. How you encourage people
how
to
upsell?
You encourage people to make a full bouquet. That's a cool tip.
Yeah, so that was great. So when Beth was getting ready to go to market, you know, I was explaining why we make them one-sided instead of, we call them 360s if they're all the way around, and how for packing, it's much better for the flower to protect them with all the greenery behind. But if someone comes up and says, oh, I want to make it into a centerpiece or something, or the vase it's going into, you know, I want it to be able to be viewed from all sides, how do I rearrange this? Don't rearrange it. Sell them two. Tell them to put them back to back and then put them in the vase and then they buy two arrangements.
No complaint then.
No complaint. And then they don't have to have any design skills because that's usually what they're most concerned about.
Right.
These look so beautiful. I'm going to mess it up if I try to redesign it for my vase to go all the way around.
That's true because you do have this sort of higher, you know, whatever's in the back is the higher one. So you put two together.
Yes.
You've got this cascading effect of something tall in the middle and stepping down.
Actually, I think that's what differentiates designer bouquets from grocery store bouquets. There's a couple things. Number one is the color combinations. Just not putting, you know, Beth and I were working on it, and she was doing one bouquet, and she's like, something's not right. What should I take out? And just by taking out the one sunflower, the yellow color, that was competing with the other two tones that she had in the arrangement,
the blues and the purples and whites.
It was just too much. And so taking that one out, because we already had the warm toned, like burgundy, and then the burgundy purple, and then the cool tone blue, it was just too many, too much going on. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is just the height differential between, like, grocery store bouquets, they cut them all the same length, and they're just like one.
They look like they have a buzz cut then.
Totally. It's like a flat top. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the flower flat top, I call it. And so by mixing up the heights, it just adds this designer quality to it. So I think that I'm hoping that she sells out today, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting to talk about, you know, the designer bouquet versus the supermarket bouquet, because sadly, supermarkets do sell more than 50% of all the flowers in the U.S. I want to restate that. More than 50% of the flower purchases
are through grocery stores.
These are not necessarily American-grown flowers.
No.
Mostly imported.
Are not.
But the aesthetic is, I think it's lowered consumers' expectations. They don't really, it's almost like, well, like, I have to buy a Hostess bouquet. I'll grab this ugly thing at the grocery store.
Because it's $7.99.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there's no emotional response to that. And it's really sad because when we saw those bouquets today, and I know these market customers of Beth's, there's an emotional response to the attention to detail.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, everyone that we did, you saw, we were saying, oh, we can't take this one to market. We have to keep this one. This one's just too pretty, you know? I mean,
like, we thought we were, like, overgiving.
Yeah, totally. We're like, this one we have to keep. So there definitely is an emotional response that I never have with grocery store ones, unless I take them home and rework them completely.
Right.
So
try to, like, upgrade them with product from your garden or your own.
Yeah, exactly.
Settings, yeah.
Going out to the trees by the house. And, you know, yeah, I definitely, it's sad to me because it's cheapened flowers a bit in the whole perception, the gift perception of flowers. You know, if you'll spend, you know, $25 on a bottle of wine, why not spend that money on a better quality U.S.-grown bouquet of flowers instead of, you know, settling for the cellophane. Flowers that cost $3 from Colombia and wrapped in cellophane wrap and have the buzz cut, you know?
And they don't last long.
They don't last long, and they're drenched in chemicals, so... Yeah.
So the there is a change, though, and we're of course champions of this change.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I think it's fascinating now. I don't know if you're willing to talk about your venture capital pitches that you're doing.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that?
Sure.
Because I think that you've honed your message so well, and you're answering questions about the floral industry posed by people who know nothing about the floral industry, you know, these business people.
Yes.
So what is resonating with people when you're out talking about this shift to American grown and to local?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. A lot of them. There's a couple questions.
Yeah,
there.
Just
so,
answer whichever one you
good.
Want.
The first thing, so we get this question a lot on, you know, people assume that we have received a lot of funding and that's how we've grown quickly and to be pretty big. And I mean, in one city, just, you know, to be pretty big. And we didn't. We bootstrapped completely from the start and are now contemplating bringing in capital. We're not dead set on it. We believe we can do it on our own, but just to be able, we have, you know, such a long wait list of people wanting us to ship nationwide. And our end goal is to provide an alternative to leading e-commerce to the big guys. And there's not that currently out there. And so the quicker we can get it done, the better. So we may end up bringing in capital. And it's been an interesting process, overwhelmingly positive.
Well, okay, first of all, your flowers are opening the door for you, right?
Yeah, they are. So we, I don't have a lot of connections in the VC world. A lot of the funded flower startups, I believe, do have some connections already to that world.
Kind
but
of
what
in the
we
investment
do have,
banking world.
Yes,
or yeah.
Exactly. Most of the startups that have received funding don't really have anything to do with flowers, actually. They're technology companies where they don't actually touch the flowers themselves. You know, they're the aggregator for other people to do the flowers, or they are, you know, having people are shipping them from another country for them.
It's just some gimmick.
Exactly. It's just another, you know, and to give them props where they're due, they've done a really good job of modernizing the UI, creating a better user interface for consumers. So they've done something good. So I'm not trying to belittle what they're doing at all, but they don't really have much to do with flowers.
But if they would only add American-grown flowers to the
mix,
then we wouldn't be criticizing
them. Right? Exactly. And a few have, but not enough. And some of the response that I've received from these meetings has been that they will invest if we do bring in imports because your net profit margin will be much higher. And I get that. They're worried about their return, and that makes sense to me. But we're not going to do it. So if we have to do it a little bit slower in order to do it the right way and to keep our ethics and mission intact, we will. But why I say it's been overwhelmingly positive is the greatest gift that it's given me is the ability to know the industry inside and out. Because I had I was telling you a little bit about this before and how one of the first meetings that I did was horrible. It was one of those meetings that you just want to go back to your car and cry your eyes out. It was like you just feel so little and small and insignificant when I left. And
because the questions were ones that you didn't have the answers for?
For a myriad of reasons. One, it was just not a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
Like our business
bad
would
first
not.
Day.
It was a bad first date. It was just a really bad first date. That's a really good way to say it. And it, you know, it went from bad to worse. It was, you know. But so I didn't have answers to a lot of the questions. I wasn't well prepared. So on my part, that was definitely something it taught me a lot. I learned. I was mad at myself. I was just, you know, berating myself in my head on why I don't know that information. And then secondly, it was just a bad fit in that, this person that I met with did not care one lick about our mission at all and was just pointing out all of the things that I was doing wrong in sticking to the American grown mission and how I wasn't basically berating me a bit about being irresponsible to my business by doing that. And, you know,
wow.
After leaving, you know, I agreed with him pointing out things I didn't know. I disagree with him, you know, his stance that I was being irresponsible to our business by not improving and maximizing our profit margins by bringing in imports, which I won't do.
But if you have that philosophy in life, then mm-hmm. that gives you an excuse to do all kinds of irresponsible or possibly unethical, make those choices for your business. Like, I don't know, outsource your labor so that mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about workplace regulations mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Or outsource production where there are yeah. no environmental regulations. Yeah. I mean, that's a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm. And I'm being responsible. I'm being really responsible by, you know, paying living wages, paying, you know, we're completely above board legal on every, you know,
you
every
are.
Area.
Every single yeah. anecdote you've told me, it's like you, yeah. you want to do it the right way.
Right way. Mm-hmm. Even if it means our profit margins are 10% less than what they would be, or 15% less than mm-hmm. what they would be if we did it otherwise. Or, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people, you know, might pay under the table or do things like that when they're first starting out. And we've set things up completely legally. And I encourage everyone to do that. Make sure you have all your licenses and just get yourself set up
yeah.
right. And then treat your team members yeah. with respect in the way that you'd want to be treated. And the loyalty will come back to you. And so I just feel that that's the right thing to do in all situations. So...
So you really, even though that meeting was really crummy, it, mm-hmm. you must have been very proud of yourself when you walked out of there thinking, I know who I am, and I know mm-hmm. what Farm Girl Flowers is, and I know what we're not.
I wasn't there yet. I got there. But what I did do when I left that meeting is I sat in my car and wrote down all of the things that I could remember from the meeting. I had written notes in the meeting, but, you know, when you're in that stage of, like, you know, oh, my God,
you
know, yeah. I wrote down everything that I needed to research mm-hmm. and find better answers to, and rebuttals for, if someone's saying something that I don't agree with about our mission, how do I respond in a respectful yet firm,
confident way
and not second guess it? And because if you second guess it in the meeting, even though I wasn't second guessing it, it was just because I didn't have a great rebuttal already practiced and rehearsed and ready for it. I didn't come across like I wanted to
yeah.
in the meeting. So from that meeting, I went back and did so much research. I now feel pretty confident that I know most answers to questions, any question that could be thrown at me. And that's invaluable. I mean, yeah. that is better than any education I could have paid for. Just the humiliation factor made me ensure that that was not going to happen again. And so, you know, now if we decide to bring in capital, I know it'll be the right people that we choose that we choose and they choose us. Because we're not going to be able to go the traditional route and just get some big name VC firms to want to invest in us, because we're not going to be able to give them the kind of return that they can get from people that are willing to compromise in those areas.
Right, mm-hmm. right. That's making me think also that we haven't talked about field to vase, mm-hmm. and I'll ask you to describe that, but yeah. all those stats that you rattle off,
yeah.
you've incorporated into some yeah. of the information like your quiz.
Yep.
So it's also educating the rest of the industry mm-hmm. and even consumers who find you on that site. So yeah. We'll have to put a link to that so people can
Thanks.
Check you out.
Yeah.
The Slow Flowers podcast is a participant
yes.
in Field to Vase. Why don't you talk about that? And because it launched right around the end of March, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah. It's been a slow growth, but, you know, honestly, we haven't been able to dedicate as much time as we need to it, but it's my little pet project that I love. Like, I just love this. It's when I was first starting Farm Girl Flowers, I couldn't find a lot of information out there. It was back in 2010, and it just wasn't, I mean, I could find the statistic that everybody used. Everybody used the same little bit of information, the 80% yeah. of all flowers sold in the U.S. are imported, and that's a really staggering statistic. But when I dug in deeper, I found that, you know, 58% of U.S. growers have gone out of business since the early 1990s, and I thought that was even a bigger statistic.
Sad.
But that took me hours to find that statistic. I mean, like, hours and hours of research. So I wanted to be able to, well, first of all, Field to Vase, I wanted a collaborative resource. I wanted one where it's not so piecemeal all around the United States. There's some amazing individuals, a lot of amazing individuals doing amazing things in the local flower movement, like yourself, like, yeah. you know, Ellen Frost, like, you know, people everywhere, Jenny Love, all these people in other places that are pretty fragmented. And I wanted one place, whereas, you know, if there's consumers out there, there are consumers out there that want to know more about the industry, or people trying to get into the industry, or current florists that are trying to transition their, you know, and change their business over to a local, you know, using local flowers and product, but they can't find the information that they're to help educate their consumers. So I wanted it to be in an easy place that kind of demystifies it, because a lot of the reports that are done, you know, there's some amazing statistics and reports out there, but you have to, you know, download these, you know, 300-page PDFs.
Like
and
the floriculture reports from the FDA.
Yes.
It's like one page that's relevant to me, and I have to dig through the whole thing.
Dig through everything. And so we want to dig through it for everyone, and just put the three facts that you want to know from that whole big, long report into a very easy-to-read format. So we, on the Field to Vase, which is, like I said, a collaborative resource, so what we've done is we reach out to anybody that we find that is supporting the local flower movement, and we ask them to write about anything they want, because we get asked to contribute to a lot of blogs, and they tell me exactly what they want me to say, pretty much. And to me, that's not, like, you're not going to get the best thing, the best of me. You're
what
just
you
not going to get the best
about?
Of me. Yeah. And I'm the one that hears what people are asking me. So, you know, Ellen Frost out in the East Coast is probably getting different questions than I am from consumers on the West Coast. And so write what's most relevant to you at that moment and what you think your customers want to hear, because it probably means there's customers all over the United States that want to hear the same thing.
Right.
So everybody's writing in this one place. And a lot of times they're writing on their blogs and we just reuse it on this, and it's, but it creates one place where people can go to get that information. And then in addition to that, we're doing, pop quiz flower biz, we call it. And so in that area, we have all kinds of statistics. You know, now that I'm learning all these statistics, I wanted a place to put them, you know, too.
Right. There's like, and, oh, I don't know, 20 or 30
Yeah, 20 boxes. Or 30 different boxes. And we keep adding to it. We have more slated, but we add to it every week. You know, because we want to, instead of that one statistic, now you have 29 other ones that you can use, too, for your educating your consumer.
So it's fieldtovase.com.
Yes, fieldtovase.com.
And you are posting 3 or 4 times a week from different contributors or from Farm Girl.
Yeah.
But it's not a big ad for Farm Girl flowers at all.
No, not at all. We actually, I think our logo is on it in very small print. And there is an intro letter from me, because I wanted to be very transparent that I do own Farm Girl flowers, but this isn't, we don't even house it on our website. So it doesn't even help drive traffic to our site. So it's on its own URL completely. There's no link.
That's true.
Yeah. It's not even housed on our site. So, we went back and forth on that, but to do that, you know, we'd have to do Vandy URLs and have it, you know, people would know. And I didn't want anyone to think that we were doing this to financially benefit Farm Girl flowers,
right.
And because then I think you lose some of that authenticity of what the actual reasoning is behind it and what the purpose is of it. So our purpose is to help promote everybody, because I think just like with a child in school, it takes a village.
Right.
And it's going to take a village to change back the industry back to using domestic flowers.
So let's wrap up by talking about domestic flowers, because I know you source mainly from California, but your definition of local is evolving.
Yes.
And then as you contemplate going national, you're going to have to yet again redefine it. So what do you see sort of in that spectrum what does local mean?
So local is very objective, and it depends on who you ask. So and I'm finding that, and people argue this a lot. So we're switching our messaging to be U.S. grown, 100% U.S. grown. We're doing that for a variety of reasons. Number one, I mean, majority of flowers in the United States, 70-some percent, still come from California.
Yeah.
However, I want to support farmers everywhere in the United States that are growing flowers and encourage others, like in Alaska, with this amazing peony crop, to give them, I mean, it's their only agricultural
export crop,
right?
Yeah.
So we want to encourage that industry in Alaska.
The farmers here are they're struggling to learn how to make a living from their land. And
let's help them, show them how.
Yeah, we want to support that market.
Definitely. And can I just say, too, in this, that the farmers that I've met up here are some of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life.
Really? What do you mean?
Oh, my gosh. So can I tell the story about the boat? So I promise I won't go very, like, off topic here, and I'll go back.
We took pictures.
Yes. Yesterday, to you out there. Yesterday, Deborah and I, it was probably one of the best days of my life. It was so much fun.
We went,
Beth, our host here at Scenic View Flowers.
Scenic Place.
Scenic Place Flowers, sorry, was so kind to take us out on her boat over to Halibut Cove, which is just probably one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen in my life.
It's like Shangri-La.
Yes.
You know, it's like a hidden community.
Yeah, I can't even believe this exists. And
I think it's kind of, we're looking at it kind of across the bay.
Directly across, right? And it's amazing. Yeah, right over there. And we're on her boat. And I mean, because Beth does it all. She drives the boat. She, you know, grows the peonies. She does the farmer's market. She runs this bed and breakfast and is amazing
cook. She
butchers the chickens. She just does everything.
Wait, because our fish we had last night, she caught.
She caught our dinner last night. She hosted the dinner party for us last night and caught the dinner for the dinner party and cooked it. It was just amazing. So,
Superwoman.
And this is all after taking us over to Halibut Cove and the engine having a problem and stopping. Like, the boat broke down in the middle of this bay.
This vast body of water.
I know. And, of course, Deborah and I just keep talking about the floral industry and all this stuff.
You did at one point go, well, there is one ore.
Yeah, I did find one ore that we could, but I think that would make us go in a circle, because I'm like, I couldn't find another one.
But you're trying to help.
I was trying to help. But then, I mean, she was just, I could not believe it. She gets on the phone. I thought, okay, well, somebody's going to come, you know, tug us back or something. No, she gets on the phone and talks to somebody who, they fix it together.
Like the fuel line.
Someone stepped on, I guess, in the past or something. But she didn't know this. Just somebody that she'd loaned the boat out to. And she finds the little tiny crack in the fuel line and somehow, like, repairs it.
Valve on it, and this was
like within 30 minutes, she had the boat going again. And I was just sitting there like, both of us were like, who is this MacGyver woman that, like, can, you know, do everything? It's just, these people up here are just amazing. So, you know,
you want to buy their peonies for even more reasons.
Back to the question of why we're redefining the local, is because we want to support people like this, that are doing amazing things and, you know, doing it so well and so just salt of the earth, like amazing people too, that we just want to support. So,
well, that goes back to Christina, something that you do for your customers is you know the farmer and you tell the farm girl customer,
yes,
often who grew what flower or, you know, in season by season,
yes,
who's supplying you.
We can tell you where that flower comes from, who grew it most times. And
you love that farmer story.
I love the farmer story. That's my, I mean, like I said, it's my favorite thing. My favorite part of my job is getting to meet these growers and hang out with them and become much more than a working relationship. Just kind of family, really close friends. And it's just,
well, it's like
it's
you
wonderful.
Want to get out in the field and cut with them.
Yes,
and
definitely.
And
don't mind getting up early, and I get up early with, like, oh, I got to go cut peonies with Beth this morning. So, so local to me, when we started, was within 200 miles. Then it expanded to Northern California. Now we are expanding to a U.S.-grown messaging because we will be growing or buying from Southern California, from Oregon, Washington, Alaska. Possibly even, like, as we do national, New Jersey and Florida have some growers as well. We want to support everybody in the U.S. That's growing and figure out the way that makes the most sense to do
sure.
that. And, you know, I get the question a lot on, like, oh, isn't that a bit, you know, false advertising because it's not local when you're, you know, buying from other states or when we will be buying from other states. And I disagree because the reasons why we do this are because we want to support U.S. growers who pay living wages to their workers, who adhere to all the pesticide and chemical regulations that the U.S. has, which is one of the hardest regulative standards out there. And the other, you know, the imports don't have to do those things. They don't have to pay living wages. The American farmer, California farmer, pays $104 a day versus $6 a day. So for those reasons. And then, you know, so, and then the second reason is, as we go national, we don't think we'll be able to source enough we know we won't from 200 miles, even from California. So we want to encourage people to be growing crops for us. And, you know, a lot of the VC meetings, a few of them have, you know, been pretty, you know, so they've suggested, you know, you just need to own your own farms. Like, a lot of the bigger e-commerce companies own their own land, and then you can grow specifically for you and, you can also not adhere to some of the labor practices in other countries if you do that. But I don't want to do that. I have no interest in doing that. And not even, I mean, there are some risks, you know, I don't want to have to deal with the risk of, you know, weather condition, you know, all that stuff. But
right.
also because I started this to support local growers. So if I'm just owning our own land and growing ourselves, then we're not supporting the local growers, you know?
Well, it's part of it's part of the...
To the same level anyway,
exactly.
you know?
Exactly. I mean, it's mm-hmm. part of that important relationship between the farmer and the florist that yes. that was broken for so long by this sort of middleman model of mm-hmm. distribution. And I know that wholesalers play an important role. And there are some wholesalers who... work very closely with farmers mm-hmm. on a positive way. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to completely diss that, but it became the pendulum swing so far yep. away from the farmer and the florist having a conversation.
Yes.
And I mean, that's what the 50 Mile Bouquet is all about. You know, I put a farmer and a florist on the mm-hmm. cover talking to each other.
Yep.
That's what you do by yep. highlighting farmers on your website or yep. in your marketing. And
I know a lot of people are doing, there's farmer florists that are doing both. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great.
And that's their business model.
That's their business model. Mm-hmm. My business model is to be an alternative to the big leading e-commerce companies. And to do that, I need to do one thing well, mm-hmm. not need to do 20 things not so well mm-hmm. or well at a smaller scale.
Mm-hmm. And that's the difference, mm-hmm. yeah. Because most people who are in the farmer florist mm-hmm. category are in one specific regional market.
Yes.
And
they do it really well, yeah. but at the scale that they can do it.
And it's sustainable.
Yes. If I want to get Farm Girl Flowers to $1 billion, I can't be growing the grow the best product out there. No, I can source the best product, U.S. Mm-hmm. grown product out there, but I can't grow it. And then, you know, design the best product out there and then market the best product out there. And so I need to really...
do what you're best at.
Do what I'm best at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to wrap up by saying that you told me the good news yesterday that you are going to be the first florist who is yes. certified American grown.
I'm so excited.
And Casey was a guest a couple weeks ago talking just about this certified mm-hmm. American grown program. So talk just a little bit about why you want to do that and mm-hmm. how you think it's going to... help in terms of educating consumers?
I think that this would be a great thing for every florist to do, honestly. I buy from a lot of farms that are tiny, who probably don't have the financial resources to pay to be American certified at this point. They will once they, right. you know, right. in a couple of years. But I want to encourage everybody to get into that, you know, half an acre plot even if they're, mm-hmm. you know. And so I want my consumers to know that we are vetting every single farm that we work with, and we know, like you said, where your flowers come from, what their labor, you know, that they're paying living wages, that
how they are grown,
and so we're doing that so you can trust us. Just like we ask our consumers to trust us on the design, how we do one daily arrangement, we also ask them to trust us that we are providing you U.S. grown in amazing facilities by amazing growers.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And how soon will you have that? Is that going to be on your packaging or on your website? Or
yeah, it's going to be on our website, and then we're going to explain what it is, and then link to mm-hmm. That for other people to be able to get. And then we'll probably be putting, you know, like a stamp on all of our marketing saying that we are
certified
American grown.
I think it is the next logical step after local.
Yes.
And I got this pushback when I came to Alaska, and I was so excited 2 years ago. And my friends were like, "Well, that's not the 50-mile bouquet; that's like mm-hmm. the 2,000-mile bouquet." Mm-hmm. And I had to stop and think about why I wasn't bothered by that. Mm-hmm. And it really went back to my excitement to see this community of farmers mm-hmm. landing on a crop that they could grow beautifully, better than anyone else at this time of the year.
Yep,
on the globe.
Yes,
and the beauty of that product combined with the demand, mm-hmm. it was like a sweet spot, yeah. and I wanted to support it. And they're not displacing another beginning grower.
Not at all. There's nothing out there this time of year. So they're not displacing any closer to home peony grower. And the pounds of CO2 used to transport peonies from Alaska versus, you know, everywhere else, Chile, everywhere else they come from. Other side of the globe. That aren't even right now because nobody grows them right now. But in a couple months when those become available, is significantly less. I don't have the exact statistic right now, but Casey from the California Flower Commission, they've done the study and it's significantly less. So it's still a much better, if you're just doing at it if you're just, you know, looking at it apples to apples, it's still a much better alternative.
Well, it's interesting. When I first interviewed Pat Holloway, who's the who's the professor at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, she said, Deborah, everything we consume in Alaska in terms of, like, food products and clothing and furniture, everything is flown in. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for something that could go on those empty planes when they left Anchorage.
They come in full.
Why don't we put something and try to create an economic development opportunity instead of just seeing these empty planes leave. So, you know, that's just sort of an interesting way of looking at
it. It's a great way of looking
creating,
at it.
Creating an opportunity for the people who live here who want to be farmers. So.
And are still adhering to all of U.S. Labor and chemical practices.
Oh, yeah, too. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk to Beth next and have a little interview with her, and she's going to talk about some of her
practices. Are in for a treat. She is amazing.
This is the extended version of the Alaska visit. So thank you, Christina.
Yep, thank you for letting me tag along. Oh, this has been the best trip
it
ever.
It has been
so
awesome. And
thank you.
You keep buying more wine, so you know I'm going to just let you stay.
Of course. I'm going to keep buying it then.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Make sure to follow Christina and Farm Girl Flowers on their social media platforms and visit DeborahPrinzing.com for photos of Christina's Alaska floral arrangements and my Alaska floral arrangements. We had a blast. I want to end this episode with a short interview that took place in Beth Van Sant's car on our way to the airport. She was our lovely host. On her website, Beth writes, "We are longtime Alaskans who work, play, and enjoy living on the Kenai Peninsula. Located on the scenic east hill of Homer, overlooking the beautiful Kachemak Bay, Beth grows 14 different cultivars of peonies for the cut flower market. At elevation 1150, Scenic Place Peonies is one of the latest producers of fresh cut peony stems grown in America, with flowers harvested from mid-July, August, and September. The farm holds a certified naturally grown designation. Beth says, because we value our family community and the wild creatures that we share our farm with, we choose to grow naturally without the use of harsh chemicals and with the utmost care and love. When you see, touch, and smell our flowers, you will only experience the true beauty and fragrance of the peony. Scenic Place Peonies thrives on a perfect combination of climate, rich black soil, cool temperatures, and crazy sunshine of up to 20 hours a day. These assets produce magnificent flowers with long, robust stems and exceptional blooms.
Hello again, and welcome to part two of the Alaska special edition of the Slow Flowers podcast with Deborah Prinzing. We're actually in the car racing to the airport, and I realize that our wonderful hostess and friend, Beth Van Sant, and I never got to record a podcast. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Deborah.
We got Christina Stemble in the back seat.
Hi.
And Beth and her husband, Kurt Wyhand, an amazing guy who we didn't get to see this time, own Scenic Place Peonies and is a wonderful, peony farm and a magical place that has been seducing Christina and me for 4 days. And so, Beth, where do we start? Can you just tell us how you started growing peonies?
Sure. Actually, I've got to give a shout out to Michael and Michelle of Chili Root. They were actually instrumental. We met them in the parking lot of Spinard Builder Supply.
And the local lumber yard.
Yeah, exactly. And they came out with all this weird paraphernalia, and it's like, what are you doing? And of course, Michelle was telling me about the flower farming part of it, and Michael was telling Kurt about the fishing part. So the boys went off and did their talk, and the girls went off and did their talk. And after about an hour sitting in the parking lot, we got back in the vehicles, and I looked at my husband and said, "Honey, I said, do you think, you know, maybe we should be peony farmers? I mean, it sounds like a really good idea.
What year was this?
This was in 2009.
Wow.
And
I just stop and ask, sure, if every woman peony farmer in Alaska is married to a male fisherman? Because that seems to be the case. And they're all cute.
Yeah.
The ones we've seen have been cute.
Some of us are, yes. Anyways, what happened is that we drove out of the parking lot, and I honestly wasn't listening to Kurt's conversation, and he really wasn't listening to my conversation. But he told me that first of all, I asked him, it's like, so can we do this? And he's like, honey, do you really need one more thing to do? And I looked at him and I'm thinking, you know what? You're right. No, we don't need to do this. And then about 3 months later, Shelly Rainwater of Glacier Peonies was on the same plane as my husband because they work for the same company. And they went ahead and were talking peonies again on the plane. And he came home after their conversation. And he said, so, honey, have you ever thought about growing peonies?
Like, wait, didn't we have this conversation?
That's what I didn't say that because, of course, if it's his idea, it's got to be true. So anyway.
I'm so glad he's going to hear this podcast.
So that's how it started, honestly. It was pretty funny.
But obviously actually, you had land, so you're a gardener.
Right, exactly. It's been, I have always loved to dabble in soil. I've always loved to get my fingers dirty. And this actually just kind of fit with our plans for our retirement and our future. Kurt fishes in the summertime, like we just talked about. And so me growing in the summertime, which is when peonies are the best here in Alaska, allows us to go ahead and go someplace else in the summer. Or excuse me, in the winter. Time.
Yeah.
Right. Someplace where it's warm. Because I have been in Alaska for a little over 45 years. And I love Alaska, but the winters get really long.
Yeah.
And so we both have come to the realization that we want to be snowbirds. So.
Well, Christina and I have had so much fun staying in your special bed and breakfast, and we're going to put really top reviews on TripAdvisor.
Yes, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Thank you both.
But there's Scenic Place is such an appropriate name. I mean, I know that's the name of your street, but there's the scenery dominates your peripheral vision and your direct vision when you're out in the peony fields. So, I mean, it's you're looking
Absolutely.
At the glaciers.
Yep, you get the glaciers. You get the world famous Homer Spit. You get Kachemak Bay, and like I said, glaciers. We have 5 glaciers that are across our bay, and we have. Some of the largest tidal changes in the world, the second to the Bay of Fundy. So when you look out there every 6 hours, it's different.
Wow.
It's always changing. And, you know, my B&B clients come up and say, oh, you must get sick of this view, huh? As a joke. As a joke,
yeah.
You know. And I look at them and honestly, I was like, I can say that no. The fog today, remember the fog this morning?
It was awesome.
Yeah. The fog comes in, it sits on the, it's everything's always changing. So I never get sick of it.
It's the best view I've ever seen.
It is.
Ever.
It was pretty, we were smitten, weren't we?
Yes.
So you have enough property that you didn't have to buy more real estate to start Scenic Place Peonies. How much acreage do you have?
We have 10.5 acres.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so,
but only approximately 1.5 acres of that is used for the peony farm.
Wow.
We're on hillside.
It's kind of tiered, isn't it?
Yep. Uh-huh. And there's a little bit of a bench area, which is where we've grown the peonies as well as our home and the high tunnel and the chicken coops and all that kind of stuff. So the majority of our property is nature, is all wildland. And below us is a green belt.
So how many plants do you have in the ground?
We have approximately 6,000.
Okay, and you've been shipping for how many years?
This year is our fourth year.
Wow.
And we shipped some last year, but it was just a very small amount that we cut on. We have 2 fields, one that was put in 2010 and the other field that was put in 2012. So it's only 2 years old, so we won't be harvesting on that for at least another year, if not 2.
And this is part of the practice then is that because they're perennials, you have to have all this restraint to not start cutting right away.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a lot of restraint because, you see all these beautiful buds and you just want to go ahead and just, if nothing else, not to sell, but just to look at them. But, you in fact do a disservice to the plant by going ahead in the early years, by letting those buds come on because it's taken energy from the root.
Mm-hmm. And, so you're just trying to really force all this growth into
absolutely.
The root.
Yeah. Every time you cut one bud off, you're allowing the photosynthesis to go through the leaf structure and into the root and provide maybe two or three stems. Whereas if you would let it go, or if you were to cut it, you'd only get one stem out of it. So wow. You're root building. The first 3 years, you're root building.
And so you're kind of in that just very early stage of harvesting and shipping, and you've shipped thousands of stems this summer, but every season subsequent to this, you'll be able to up your production quantity or your
That's
harvesting
the goal.
Quantity.
Yeah. That's the goal. Yep. Yeah, and actually it's been a real blessing to actually start out this way, because with any new venture, there's stumbling blocks that you always have to oversee or overcome.
Yeah.
And it's been really interesting. Our weather has played a really huge factor in the last 2 years for us. The last year, I was only planning on cutting on about 800 plants, and I kind of had foresaw that we would, you know, maybe harvest like 2,000 or 3,000 buds, and our summer came on 2 weeks early. So that kind of put a crunch on any of the pre-sales that I had made.
For 2014?
That was for last year.
Oh, okay.
This year, I went ahead and didn't take as many pre-sales because of last year. So again, a learning curve. But we were a month early.
Gosh, because of the weather.
Because of the weather. It was so, April, May, we were in the 60s and 70s, which is absolutely unheard of for Alaska. But fortunately, the global market was also early, and so the demand was still there. And so we have pretty much sold out our whole cooler.
Okay, and it's August?
Today is August 4th.
Yep. Okay.
I should just be cutting.
Right, right. So you just have to kind of roll with it when Mother Nature intervenes.
Absolutely.
So you've cut, like, close to 5,000 stems this summer.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What is so special about peonies in Alaska, and specifically your peonies?
The first question, Alaska, is that normally we can offer them when no place else in the world can offer them.
Wait, say that again so people hear that.
Normally, that's the big key word here. We offer peonies when no place else in the world offers peonies.
At the time when every bride wants a peony, right?
Absolutely. July, August, September.
Wow.
And that's when Alaskan peonies come on. Because of our long light periods, you know, we're close to 23 in June, hours of light.
A day. Oh, my gosh.
Our peonies get really large, really fast, and they have super vibrant colors because of the cold. We normally drop down in the 40s at night. We get normally into 55, 60 during the daytime. So our colors are different than the lower 48.
They seem more saturated and more intense or more pure. I mean, either way. The whites are more white and the reds are more red. Does that make sense?
You know,
is that the way to put it?
I'm not quite sure if I'm not quite sure if that's the way I would
maybe
put it.
Maybe that's just
what
my
I would
observation.
Say though is that I know that when I look at lower 48 peonies and I look at mine, they are different. They definitely are different. I'm not sure if it's the soil, or if it's the temperature, but because of the sunlight and because of our long day periods, they're much larger. We get a really large peony.
We have this person in the back seat making big arm gestures. Christina, go ahead and tell us what you think.
I've just seen the biggest peonies I've ever seen in my life up here. And in the lower 48, we get peonies April through end of June. And so just to talk about what the natural, you know, or the lower 48 when you get peonies. So to be able to get peonies later in the season is really huge. But also these peonies are as big as my face.
Yeah.
They're huge.
Yeah. Yeah, they are big.
They're
yeah.
pretty darn amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's special about Scenic Place peonies, I think, is the care that you take to really custom grow these flowers.
Absolutely. I really look for quality. I really strive in making sure that my product is good. I mean, my woofers can attest to that. We are a certified naturally grown farm. And so we do not use any pesticides or herbicides or any of that, the chemicals that you'll find on a lot of farms, because we like to feed the soil and the microorganisms that live in the soil so that they feed the plant. And I think that makes our plants stronger, more resistant to disease. And
that's a good point. So you're only using natural applications, nothing.
Absolutely.
Nothing processed or synthetic.
Nope. Not at all. Yeah. And it takes more work. It's harder. It's more costly. But in my mind, it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's just like I like to feed my body good things that's going to be healthy for me. I want to feed the plants. And they will take care of me.
And you're on this giant, beautiful hill up above the bay. You don't want any toxins rolling through the underwater stream system into the bay.
We have actually two ravines that have springs that come out of our hillside, and so anything that we would put on, it would drain down into the lower part of our community and our neighbors and indirectly into our bay.
Well, I know this has been rushed, but we have a plane to catch.
I was wondering when you're going to wrap it up.
Beth, Christina and I are just so grateful to you for such an amazing 4 days of spending our summer visit to Scenic Place Peonies. Ostensibly, I was here to be with the Homer Gardeners Weekend, and I did have a wonderful time speaking and teaching with Christina and giving and touring gardens, but the special part was being with the peony farmers, and especially with you. Thank you so much.
No, we loved having you.
And we'll put,
and Christina.
Yeah.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
We'll put photos up on DeborahPrinzing.com so people can find you. And Christina is planning on putting a whole gallery together, so I'll make sure I link to that. And this is not goodbye.
Absolutely not.
This is until next year.
Absolutely. Sounds good. All right. Thanks for coming, Beth, and visiting us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I appreciate all the wonderful comments and brainstorming ideas that you guys have given us.
It was awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me today to hear some of the exciting voices in American flower farming and floral design. Please check out DeborahPrinzing.com for links, photos, and more details about today's guests. And please join me next week for another insightful and educational episode of the Slow Flowers Podcast. Thanks to listeners like you, this podcast has been downloaded nearly 18,000 times. If you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. Until next week, please join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. The Slow Flowers Podcast is engineered and edited by Hannah Holdgertz and Andrew Wheatley. Learn more about their work at hhcreates.net.